flight attendant said American adopt ASAP. A 16-hour flight leaves passengers where they started, and the first complaints arise from the tush test. We're talking with Shannon Hurst Lane and Beth Blair from the TravelingMamas.com blog this week on episode 32 of the Airplane Geeks podcast. Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 32 of the Airplane Geeks. We're the Airplane Geeks. I'm Courtney. With me, as always, is Max.
Hello, Courtney. Hello, everyone.
And with us this week, we have two, might I say, crazy moms who abandoned their families to travel around the world and write about travel. I did not make that up. They told me to say that, one in particular. We're speaking with Beth Blair. She's the Desert Mama. And Shannon Hurst Lane, she's a Cajun mama. They're both freelance travel writers and co-founders of TravelingMamas.com. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
We also would like to point out, as I'm sure we will throughout several points in this podcast, that TravelingMamas.com is a finalist on the Bloggies. So everybody make sure you go and vote for them on the Bloggies. And I guess congratulations are in order.
Thanks. We're just glad to make it to the finals, but thank you.
I think that's quite an accomplishment. Max, quite a bit of news, some rather interesting news this week. What do you say we jump into it?
Let's go.
First up on the news this week, this from Flight Global, Eclipse sold to Peeper spinoff. A federal bankruptcy judge in Delaware on January 20th approved the sale of Eclipse Aviation to Eclipse Jet Aviation, a new subsidiary created by Eclipse chief executive Roel Peeper. This is just kind of some house cleaning items for us, Max, because we did report the last week or two, I believe, that this was going to happen with the auction deadline passing.
Yeah, now we know a little bit more about what's ahead for Eclipse, although, you know, there's a lot of details we'll have to learn in the coming months. One interesting thing that I thought was mentioned in this article, we talked about, you know, what about all the, you know, the prospective owners who had put down deposits and you know, where did they stand in line, you know, with the other creditors? And I see that the judge required that Eclipse Jet set aside $3.2 million, which would cover the 32 Eclipse 400 owners that aren't represented as creditors if they are successful in their lawsuit to get their $100,000 deposits back. So I'm sure they're very happy about that.
Okay, moving on into the next news story. This from Bloomberg. Airlines more likely to defer deliveries, UBS survey shows. Almost one-third of the respondents to the survey, these being airlines, said they were more likely to postpone the delivery of planes on order compared with 8% 3 months ago. One-third of those questioned said they would seek to move up their deliveries if earlier slots became available, compared to 44%. This is our article to kind of talk about how crappy everything is with fourth quarter earnings and everything. To be quite honest, we had a couple great stories, but Air Transport World seems to be offline tonight, so you have to bear with us.
Yeah, you know, there were some interesting facts that came out in Speed News this past week with respect to Southwest's order deferrals for their 737-700s. And the numbers are pretty jaw-dropping. They had a delivery schedule of 22 of these aircraft in 2010, and they've dropped that down to 10. The drop in 2011 was from 32 down to 30 aircraft, and from in 2012 from 40 to 23. So Southwest has really, really pushed out their aircraft deliveries in a big way.
And this just is met with a flurry of horrible fourth quarter earnings. Just some international numbers. Asia Pacific cargo traffic was down near 25%, as well as some of the cargo traffic moving through the Middle East and Europe. 25% decline in traffic is astounding.
It's massive.
That is massive. So what looks like, you know, it almost seems like the U.S. airlines have kind of gotten used to the idea of losing lots of money, and they've made the capacity adjustments to maybe lose a little bit less than massive amounts of money. But this is an international and global problem.
Yeah, sure. And closer to home, speaking of big losses, United announced their fourth quarter results last week. And in the fourth quarter, they lost $1.3 billion. They'd actually had a $53 million loss in the fourth quarter of 2007. But that brings the loss for 2008 for United to $5.3 billion net loss. Really huge. We also have results from American, also reporting a net loss. Their loss is smaller. Fourth quarter was $340 million. That brings them to a net loss for 2008 of $2.1 billion. Also from Southwest, they had a net loss in the fourth quarter, $56 million. But they did manage to post a net income, actually, of $178 million, just $178 million for 2008. And that represents their 36th consecutive year of profitability, but just barely squeaking through. So the numbers are not looking good. We have more results out this coming week from Delta, JetBlue, Continental, and U.S. Airways. So we'll wait to see what their results look like.
Moving on to our next story, and this is from MSNBC, where we have several stories tonight. Dear Mr. President, how Obama can fix air travel. This is by Rob Lovett. He's a travel writer with MSNBC, rather. Rob has five items that he thinks could be met and addressed by President Obama to best fix, basically, travel industry in the U.S. The first one is fix the FAA. Simple as that, right, Max? Just flip a switch.
Yeah, sure. Fix the FAA.
Provide air passengers real protection. He kind of gets into the passenger bill of rights, suggested that we'll get into later in the podcast. Reinvigorate rail service, which I thought was interesting. Obama had taken a train from Philadelphia to Washington for the inauguration, which a lot of the train aficionados became very excited about, that maybe he will be improving rail service. Unfortunately, it seems like, let's see, Rob says, sounds great, although the price tag and time frame are, shall we say, prohibitive.
There's a commercial running on TV from one of the rail freight companies trying to make a sort of an economic case, financial case for, you know, for using rail to move freight around. And let's see if I can remember this correctly. They quoted it taking 1 gallon of gasoline, or 1 gallon of fuel, I'll say, to move, I think, 2 tons, something like 400 miles, which is, you know, certainly in a you know, efficient, you know, use of petroleum fuel. But I don't know how that would compare with air freight, for example. But, you know, it sounds pretty competitive.
Number four on Rob's list is fix infrastructure financing. The Highway Trust Fund, the primary revenue source for the nation's road and mass transit improvements, is running dry. It won't be popular, but raising the federal gas tax, the last increase was 1993, may not be the only way, or may be the only way, to avoid further disrepair, more emergency appropriations, and even bigger deficits. Wow. Way to drop the bomb there. But I can't say I disagree with them. I mean, that's kind of the taboo thing to do, right? You know, the gas tax, oh, it's horrible. But, you know, we're kind of looking at some federal funding issues.
Sure. And if you're going to raise that tax, this is probably the time to do it.
Certainly. And the last one, promote inbound tourism, which, as he said, is an easy one, but there are some compelling numbers in here. According to the U.S. Travel Association, a $100 million campaign would result in $8 billion per year in new visitor spending and $850 million per year in federal tax revenue.
Yeah, they're pretty impressive numbers.
Okay, so moving on to our next story, this from Forbes. American Air and attendants begin safety program. American Airlines and its flight attendants union said Friday they agreed to start a program in which workers can report safety concerns without fear of retaliation. A similar program involving American pilots died last year when the pilots union and the company couldn't settle differences over job protections, an impasse that drew criticism from the nation's top aviation official. ASAPS with Pilots at American, that's the name of the program, the Aviation Safety Action Program. ASAPS with Pilots at American, Delta, and other carriers have lapsed in recent years. Leaders of pilots unions at American accuse the company of abusing the program by disciplining captains for inadvertent safety lapses. So here's the situation, and I know this is quite active in the blogosphere, is the kind of demise of these ASAP programs, which are fantastic programs for safety. Seems the pilots are moving away from them as discussions with managements have kind of become ugly. But here looks like the first time that a flight attendants will be involved in this program.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing to me that these programs don't exist and aren't completely active. The fact that there's some difficulty with the different sides coming to an agreement on an effective way to do this is kind of surprising. I mean, I think Beth, you in a previous life have some experience in the flight attendant arena, I think, right?
Yes, I've worked for three airlines and two as a flight attendant.
Did you ever experience issues or problems with voicing concern about things?
Well, you kind of get to a point where you feel very supported by your crew, so you don't want to go behind their back and backstab. On the other hand, you have your duty to your passengers, to the airline, to safety. And so I think that a lot of flight crew do feel pulled either way. I do think that this is something that's very important, though, because nothing is more important than safety, obviously.
Right, absolutely.
So I think this is a good thing to go ahead and that they're implementing this.
Have past problems been that, the airline or management or, whatever you want to call it, didn't treat these programs with sort of the confidentiality and respect and seriousness that they really deserve?
Absolutely, because I've known personally crew members who have been in a situation where they reported something and next thing you know, they're being blackballed by their crew members because they feel like they're not trusted anymore because they might rat you out.
Wow.
So it's a tough spot to be in.
How about you, Court? When you were flying, did you experience anything along those lines?
Yeah, I see exactly where Beth's coming from. And I was kind of on the other side of the door and I saw it happening to the cabin crew probably more often than, from a first officer standpoint. And, it's kind of a difficult situation. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this program shakes out because it seems like, what Beth is concerned about is the crew itself is concerned about somebody else in their crew talking about something that could get them in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The ASAP program protects from self-incrimination, and I don't know how far that's going to go. If you say, look, we had a problem where the captain did this and probably shouldn't have, are they still going to go after the captain? Is that going to address the problem of the captain seeing disciplinary action from the company because of something that somebody else had seen? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't address the issue that Beth is talking about. At least, I hope I'm wrong in assuming that.
I've never been a flight attendant, but, women and a women majority, I know that it's not all women that are flight attendants, but, statistically, I think there are more women. And when you put a few women together for days on end working, sometimes there is conflict because we're definitely a lot different than men in resolving our conflicts and dealing with things. But,
yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, it's a little known fact that that is the actual reason why the cockpit door is now bulletproof. My question about this program is, if you report somebody or something that was somebody else's fault, is that covered under the ASAP program, or are you going to have flight attendants running in to grab as many forms as they can for fear that somebody else is going to report them and they can at least have this to say that we self-disclosed first? It seems like it maybe not be addressing all the issues that that kind of Beth talked about and Shannon talked about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do. I could see where you get very, very stressed doing that, and you can't take your stress out on your passengers and things that maybe normally wouldn't have been such a big deal in the rest of the world type of business in your job. You know, I guess they really do feel like, well, I better report it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you how you can get back at your passengers. You can keep them on the airplane for 16 hours, which just so happens to segue perfectly into our next story. This from MSNBC. After 16 hours, passengers end up where they started. I'll give you the short story on this because it really takes the whole article to really get a good grasp of what happened. Essentially, there was an aircraft that departed Mexico City for Seattle. However, during the flight, the weather in Seattle became so foggy that it closed the airport, and the aircraft was forced to divert to Portland. Portland did not have the customs handling capability required to handle this flight from Mexico City, so they kept the aircraft on the tarmac for 4 hours. So that's a 6-hour flight, 4 hours on the tarmac. That airplane departed Portland and flew back to Mexico City.
16 hours.
Some of the firefighters in Portland felt so sorry for the passengers that they bought McDonald's hamburgers and passed one out to each passenger. I don't know if that's nice or really, really cruel.
Well, what's the plan for a situation like that? Do airlines not have something in place? I understand that they didn't have customs, but could they not keep these people, at least get them off the plane and keep them in a particular area, some secure area, and then bring in, I don't know. There's got to be something with customs. I mean, I'm in Louisiana, and we've got Border Patrol running around in my neighborhood looking for people that came from Mexico. Why don't we have customs at other airports, you know?
You know, that's a good point. This has to happen all the time. You know, we think of Mexico to Seattle. Oh, yeah, yeah, that doesn't happen all that often where a situation like this. But think of all the flights coming over across the Pacific or across the Atlantic. This happens often. In fact, you know, I could count, you know, probably a half dozen times where I'm sitting in Bangor, Maine, and a Virgin Atlantic 747 pulls up behind us. In Bangor, Maine. Well, that's because it's kind of designated as the alternate airport. This happens. There's customs set up to handle those people. This just sounds like a major, major screw-up from the Portland airport.
Yeah, who dropped the ball? Because apparently a ball had to be dropped somewhere because, you know, they have these plans in place, but if this person doesn't notify the correct person in that department, you know, where did it go wrong?
Right, and there's kind of part of the story that struck me as I was reading through it. You know, a 6-hour flight, sitting on the tarmac for 4 hours, not allowing any of the passengers or crew to disembark, except for, I believe, there were some who had medical issues that needed off the airplane.
Yeah, right.
And then the airplane went back, so that's 16 hours. Let's say it's, you know, with our report, that's well over the 16-hour FAA duty time, but it's 12 hours of flying. That's 4 hours over the 8-hour duty limit, or flight time limit. How was that even allowed?
Yeah, this whole thing is just a mess, and, you know, it's incidents like this that cause people to get, just, you know, fed up. And that's why we see sort of increasing, you know, interest in a airline, you know, passenger bill of rights.
Max, that was a very valiant effort at a segue, but you forgot about the tush test story.
Okay, so we'll come back to the airline passenger bill of rights issue in just one moment. But first, this from court.
These messages from the Canadian government. Okay, our next news story is by far my favorite story that we've had, I'd say, over the last several episodes. If you remember, we talked about the Canadian ruling that said that if passengers had a physiological need for an extra seat, whether it be an attendant, whether it be because their girth was too much for the seat, that they be forced to give that to them. So the airlines were essentially forced into a two-for-one sale for anybody who happened to be obese. Now, the question that was raised across the board was, who decides? Well, we've found out who's been deciding. This from MSNBC again. Canadian doctors decry airline tush test. On all domestic flights within Canada, the carriers are required to provide additional seating to disabled travelers who must be accompanied by a personal attendant or two travelers determined by medical professionals to be functionally disabled by obesity. How airlines determine who needs or gets an extra seat has been a thorny issue. On January 10th, Air Canada and WestJet announced they will require disabled or obese passengers seeking a second seat to get a note from a doctor and send it in for review well before their flight date. Of course, the doctors don't like that. Why? Disability rights groups claim the medical forms require passengers to give too much personal information to the airlines. They suggest a third party would be better suited for the job. Now, what exactly, you may ask, are they requiring these doctors to fill out? There's a medical form that Air Canada sends out that includes a diagram of how doctors can calculate the width of a patient's behind. It's called the tush test, and it's hilarious.
Oh, I don't want to be around for a tush test.
All the listeners will see this, the picture of the actual tush test. You can practice on yourself. It's pretty self-explanatory instructions here. But there is an outline of a person sitting facing away from you, and on the left side of their rear end, it says point A. And on the right side of their rear end, it says point B. And that is how you measure the width of somebody's bum.
Okay, I got a comment here. Yeah. I'm looking at the diagram, and where it's showing point A and point B, I think the people in question that they're talking about, you're not going to measure them right there. That's not going to be the part that is going to make them larger for the seat. Seriously. It's more than just that. I mean, you're looking at the picture, are you not?
Yes, yeah, we're all looking at the picture.
Okay, yeah. So it's like from hip to hip. What if your stomach is like really, really big, but you have no behind? Can you get away with it?
Well, I think the critical flaw in this diagram is there's a distinctive hourglass figure.
Yeah.
Right.
But which lends to your point. But on the other hand, and as Max and I were talking before the podcast, you know, we were really going through these stories where the Canadian government kind of dropped a bomb on the airlines. And we thought, you know, everybody's going to show up, say, I'm obese, give me two seats. And, you know, how is the airline going to regulate this? You got to give them points for creativity.
It's, I don't know how this is going to work. And you know, you also have a lot of people who maybe have a different self-image of their size than, let's say, the rest of the world has, who will, you know, refuse to believe that they should even be considered for the tush test. And they're going to show up with their tushes and not fit. You know, it's you can't win with this. There's no way to win with this. I don't see any way out of it.
In my experience, I have seen passengers yell at each other because the person stuck in the middle couldn't sit in their seat. I've had flights delayed because of it.
I bet.
And I mean, numerous times. I mean, this is especially these days, it's a common thing. I've seen the airlines have to end up reimbursing the passenger who was uncomfortable because they were so miserable the entire flight that the flight crew said, would have the airplane met with management and say, you have to reimburse or at least compensate this person somehow because they were miserable.
Yeah, and people are not very tolerant these days, too. I mean, I think I related, you know, in a previous episode where I was sitting next to a very large individual and sort of how that impacted my flight. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. Sometimes you get the empty seat. Sometimes you get the skinny guy next to you. Sometimes you get the large guy. And, you know, that's sort of life. But these days, people are more sort of self-centered and interested in their own personal comfort. So it's not surprising that there's a lot of reaction by, you know, by passengers when they're inconvenienced as a result of the seatmate they happen to have.
A common practice with people of size is what I was trained to call them, people who need two seats or at least more than one. They steal the seatbelt extensions.
Yeah.
And that on the next flight, they don't have to ask for it. And so I have always experienced that, a shortness of seatbelt extensions.
You mean they take them with them?
Yeah, they take them with them so they don't have to ask for them on the next flight.
I see. Okay.
But, you know, I mean, let's dig into the reason why they ask or why they're taking them. They're embarrassed. I mean,
absolutely.
Can't blame them.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's embarrassing for that person when, you know, I come from a family where most of the members are large people, and they do fly, and I don't know that anybody's been asked to purchase a second seat or anything like that, but I've also experienced sitting next to a large traveler, and he was placed in the center seat in the middle row, and I could tell looking in his eyes, he was very, very embarrassed because he had to push me. You know, I was, you know, a little uncomfortable, but it was okay with me because I understood his point of view where he, you know, he's like, I'm sorry, you know, and I go, oh, don't worry about it. You know, I'm good. You know, you need me to lift the armrest up to get, you know,
yeah,
but he wouldn't
yeah.
let me do that, you know, try to give him a little bit more room, but people, they're embarrassed and I don't know how this is going to work. This is a touchy subject, you know,
yeah, it sure
for
is.
Some people, they'll get, you know, the larger people are going to get offended because they feel like they're being discriminated against, and then the people that aren't get offended because they feel like somebody else is getting something more than what they get. And
yeah.
You're right. It goes back to the nature of people.
Yep, it sure does. And, you know, I think we said it last time, but, you know, we'd invite any listeners who have, you know, been on either side of this issue to, you know, write in or leave us a voicemail. And if you've got some thoughts on, you know, how to work through this issue, we'd love to hear them. If you've got some personal experiences, if you want to remain anonymous and give us your thoughts, that's great. Please do.
Moving into our last story, and this was the segue that Max gave a little bit early. The passenger Bill of Rights seems to be coming up again. This from the Daily Democrat. Thompson puts up airline Bill of Rights proposal again. Northern California Congressman Mike Thompson has reintroduced legislation to grant airline passengers basic rights by ensuring that they have access to food, water, and other basic necessities and preventing them from being held indefinitely on planes. There's a laundry list of his requests, shall we say. He suggests that airlines provide passengers with food, potable water, comfortable cabin temperature and ventilation, and adequate restrooms while a plane is delayed on the ground. Passengers be offered the option to safely deplane after sitting on the ground for 3 hours, and it would be provided every 3 hours should the airplane continue to sit on the ground. The creation of a consumer complaint hotline run by the DOT. So, again, these are kind of the basic plans, blueprints, if you will, to the passenger Bill of Rights that we saw last time. Does this have any more of a chance of passing?
Hard to say. You know, people have kind of had enough. You know, if we have plenty of examples of, you know, sitting on the tarmac for even 12 hours and, you know, the facilities filling up and no food and no water and, you know, sort of excessive heat. It's really unbearable conditions, and it shouldn't be that way. So, I mean, I think this is a great idea. I think it's overdue. I understand that the airlines would, you know, prefer to, you know, manage these situations themselves on a case-by-case basis. but we just have too many examples where that just, you know, didn't happen very well. So if the industry can't, you know, provide some certain level of comfort to its paying passengers, then I think the government needs to step in.
Beth, tell us the nightmare about being stuck with a plane full of passengers, irate passengers.
It is a nightmare. And the worst part is whenever you usually are sitting at the gate for a while and the flight attendants are not getting paid because you don't actually get paid until on most airlines until you actually push back from the gate. So as you're sitting there with the front door closed and it's getting hot and passengers are getting angry and they're yelling at you because they're going to miss their next flight, you're not getting paid as a flight attendant. You're just working for free.
Right.
And that, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So most of the airlines, you only get paid for flight time once you push back from the gate.
Hmm.
And it's very frustrating, and you just try to keep the smile and do the best you can. But it's a very tough situation to be in. And the worst part is just you feel bad for the passengers, because I wouldn't want to be sitting there either with in the heat next to someone who may have too much perfume on, a screaming baby. Right. I mean, it's bad situation.
It's very uncomfortable. Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable.
Okay, it's time to move into the main topic. And again, we're talking with Beth Blair and Shannon Hurst Lane. Beth is also known as Desert Mama. Shannon is known as Cajun Mama. And they write a blog with two other mamas. If I remember correctly, it was Mountain Mama and Mudslide Mama, correct?
That's correct.
And they are the Traveling Mamas. You can read their blog at travelingmamas.com, which was recently nominated by the Bloggies.
Yay!
So my first question, the three of the four mamas seem to have geographically oriented names. You've got Cajun from Louisiana, obviously, Desert from somewhere out west, Mountain from, I would guess, the mountains, and then one seems to be named after a drink.
You're pretty sharp.
Where did that come from?
The mudslides of California.
Oh, that doesn't count. Make up a better story than that.
Well, we all like to drink. We all have our favorite cocktails, you know.
No, just kidding.
Tell us a little bit about the blog and how you guys got together and started writing.
Shannon, do you want to tell?
No, you go.
Well, the four of us are all professional travel writers, and we all met at an industry event. And as we sat around drinking wine and giggling and talking about our lives, we decided this would be a fun thing to keep going online with a blog. And so Shannon went ahead and she kicked things in gear and she got things just rolling. And she said, okay, we're live. Let's go. And we started a year ago, and it's just been a fantastic year.
Tell us some of the topics that you write about on your blog. Tell our listeners.
We cover everything from girlfriend getaways to weekends with our husbands, family trips. We cover culinary and food and, you know, food and spirits. We just do it all. Anything travel related. We love to review travel gear, items. What else, Shannon? Chime in.
We give things away.
Oh, for free.
We have giveaways. So we like that because that's a lot of fun, because it's a lot of times we'll bring something back from our travels, and we're able to share something from a destination we visited with our readers. And our readers seem to enjoy the interaction of leaving comments, you know, remembering where they went on their honeymoon to this place, or a horrible experience they had, or some really off-the-wall time. And we just have a blast. I mean, we just pretty much write about what we want to write about as long as it's somehow related to travel. So it's fun. We have editorial control, and I think that's why we enjoy it so much, because it's ours.
Ah, wonderful. Do you have a really remarkable kind of airline story that you could share?
Wow. One time, I don't know if you, Silverjet, have you ever heard of Silverjet?
Absolutely, yeah.
I got, that was like, as far as good, remarkable. That's what you're looking for, right? Or something really bad?
Oh, either whatever. Way, either way.
I was invited to go to London, and Silverjet was taking some of their inaugural flights, you know, a few weeks, and they opened up a few seats and invited me to go along. It's a really, really good flight, a nice experience, however, very, very expensive. So I don't know that the normal average person would be able to experience that unless they were going on their 25th anniversary or something like that.
Well, I don't think anybody will be experiencing that anymore since the airline has been shut down.
Well, exactly. And look at that. You have great service, and you offer awesome things, and then you shut down. And then you have places like United with a really crappy service, and they're still in business, running flights.
Shannon and Beth, as far as I understand, you both do writing, a significant amount of writing, outside of the blog. Could you kind of talk about some of the things you've done?
Beth, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I cover a lot of the Southwest. I write regionally here in Arizona, and I have written for several online publications. In the past year, I've written for AirTran, Airways Go magazine, and Draft magazine, which is a beer magazine. And I also have a couple of articles coming up in Aviation Security International. And so I'm looking forward to that.
I'm just curious, how do you, you know, find topics for your articles? Or, you know, do they get given to you by an editor, or do you kind of, you know, think up topics?
Sometimes. I've had editors seek me out through my website, my personal website, or through Traveling Mamas. But most of the time we pitch magazines, we get an idea, and we go directly to the magazine itself and tell the editor our idea. And then they call it right back and say, yes, no, maybe, can you tweak it?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes from there.
So does the blog help? You kind of mentioned it, though. Does the blog help, you know, get your foot in the door sometimes?
I think so. It definitely has been a great platform for the four of us. It's really gotten our names out there. And
so maybe for someone who's aspiring to be a writer, you sort of recommend that kind of approach?
Absolutely. It's necessary these days. It really helps to establish who you are, proves you can write, and kind of gives you an outlet for editors to track mm-hmm. you down and see what you're capable of.
You know, we've talked about social networking on this podcast in the past, at least with respect to aviation. But do you guys participate in any you know, sort of social communities, online communities that also help you with this?
Yeah, the big time suck, like Twitter. That I'm very addicted to Twitter, and I'm in Twitter. Anonymous.
Yeah.
It's really good.
I love LinkedIn too.
And Facebook can, you know, what is it? LinkedIn's for business. Facebook, it's, you know, all the people you went to high school with in college. And it's kind of like, I don't know, just like a social thing. And then you have Twitter, which is like happy hour.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, we're all on it. What about you guys? What are you y'all are on all these social networks?
Yes. Max and I are very active on Twitter. Of course.
Although I have more followers.
It's on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both active on Twitter, both personally and through Airplane Geeks. That we need to do a little bit more, Max.
So yeah, all these things, and I'm also participant in LinkedIn, and I mean, I agree with you guys. Across all those things, they really kind of enrich the experience and you know, sort of help develop you know, the awareness of other people and the things you're trying to do. And they're very valuable.
Oh, definitely so, definitely. Not only has it brought us new readers that may not have known about us before, but we've been able to develop relationships, you know, social relationships on the internet through Twitter and all that have actually led to, you know, some jobs, which is a very good thing right. for us to be able to make money this day and age over Twitter by, you know, just networking with people that are in the same industry we're in. So I highly recommend social networking, social media to all your listeners, because it's really worth the time as long as you, you know, dedicate only a certain time a day, you know, because if you just say, oh, I'm going to be on it more than 1 hour a day, you can really, really get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, yes, you can. Yeah.
Forget to let the dog out and things like that.
Well, Shannon and Beth, I do want to make sure that before we leave that we make you as uncomfortable as the rest of our guests by doing something that we call award associations. And the name of the game is, you'll hear a word, probably a phrase, and just tell us the first thing that comes to mind. Now, Max and I talked about how we were going to do this with two people, and I think we've decided that the first one wins.
Oh, Lord.
In this competition, you'll be timed by each other's responses.
Kind of. Oh, gee, thanks. Pit us against each other.
No pressure.
It's on. It's a mama off.
A mama it's off. A mama.
All right, I'll go first. My first phrase is airline fees.
Crappy.
I can't beat that one.
I won that one.
Okay, my first one, seat back pocket.
Ooh, gum.
You beat me, sorry.
I really was looking for a dirty diaper. But we will accept
gum. And I was going to say Sky Mall, but she beat me.
Yeah, the gum is really true. What's the nastiest thing, Beth? And maybe, what not nastiest, what's the Ooh. Strangest thing you've ever found in a seat back pocket?
Well, I won't tell you.
Okay, never mind.
Oh. Well, we have found mini diapers. I've found, cups full of tobacco spit.
Ew.
Yeah, that was pretty gross. That happened a couple times, actually. And there is tons of gum in there and dry, banana peels that have been there for days. And the food is just the worst. Food and, disgusting things. Used tissues. It's just disgusting.
I'm not going to put anything of mine in a seat pocket in the future that I intend to take out after that.
I do not recommend it.
Best travel destination?
Turks and Caicos.
Hawaii.
Ah. I've been to Hawaii, but I've never been to Turks and Caicos.
It's fresh on the mind. I was there last month. It's amazing.
What did you like about it?
The sand. It was so white.
Huh.
It was just, and the sunsets were beautiful. I mean, it was just the perfect, isolated, relaxing place to be. There's no commercialism. It's just a typical, whenever you think of an island, it was that turquoise water, white sand. It was just amazing. Surreal.
Now, Shannon, I heard a Hawaii in there. What's your?
Yeah. Well, because the mamas, we all went for our little mama meetup in Hawaii last May.
Woo-hoo.
And we had a really good time. We all gathered in Maui for a few nights, and then each one of us took off on our own and explored an island by ourselves. And
wow,
it was
wonderful.
Really cool and very relaxing because their favorite phrase is, oh, no worries. It's like, dude, I'm about to miss my flight. Can you please get me there quicker? Oh, no worries, man. We'll get you there. That's all the time. No worries. No worries.
Okay, my next word. In the event of a water landing...
Do not open the back door.
I was going to say fun jet, but...
Yeah.
That's a good one. And just, I promise that I bring this up because it's been on my mind all week, but... I guarantee that you haven't had any passengers over the last couple of weeks screw up and call a flight attendant stewardess or air waitress after the incredible job they did evacuating the Denver air crash and the Airbus Hudson crash. So everybody knows, they should know now why they're there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a ditching was my biggest fear because had never been a successful one where everyone survived. And this, I was in awe. I was just so proud of that entire crew. It was just a remarkable experience.
It really was.
Well, it makes you feel better, though, as far about flying with the crew that, people do know how to do their jobs and
right.
They step up when it's time to step up. And
yep. I think it makes you feel good when you see that.
It does.
All right, my last word association is best carry-on bag.
Backpack.
Hmm.
I've gone a week with a backpack, and I've been able to still stuff it in the top and not have too many people angry at me.
Yeah, really the answer, Max, is whatever fits.
Well, I'm a bit spastic when I travel sometimes, and if I have one of those rolling bags, I'm apt to trip someone. Probably an elderly woman with a cane would end up tripping over my bag that I'd be dragging past me. So a backpack is probably the safest for me. I just knocked a few people in the head by accident when I'm walking through, but it's better than tripping people, I guess.
And just a suggestion for those of you who may find yourself on an aircraft and you want to try the backpack, take it off before you start walking down the aisle.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an episode of the Three Stooges.
Yeah. Okay, last word. Airplane geeks.
Oh, hot.
Hot. Well said for somebody who's never seen our pictures. Ladies, we can't say thanks enough for joining us. Again, that's Beth Blair. She's Desert Mama. It's Shannon Hurst Lane. She's Cajun Mama. And they are two of the four Traveling Mamas blogging on TravelingMamas.com. Go vote for them at the Bloggies. They are a finalist for Travel Blog, correct?
Yeah.
Ladies, yeah, once again, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well,
no,
thank you.
This was terrific. Thanks.
A big thanks again to Beth and Shannon, both Desert Mama and Cajun Mama, for joining us. Now Max has his pick of the week.
My pick this week is Air Force Blue Tube. This is at youtube.com/AFBLUETUBE. This is the YouTube channel that's hosted by the Air Force Public Affairs Agency. In addition to videos, it contains some news and other information from the U.S. Air Force, and it's also got videos and stories from airmen. It's more than just, you know, kind of a PR arm of the Air Force, in my opinion. There's some interesting things to take a look at. The featured video that I watched the other day showed the C-17, which is actually one of my personal favorite aircraft, delivering MRAPs to Afghanistan. These are the armored fighting vehicles, the mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles, and it was kind of interesting to see how that's those big trucks are transported on this on the C-17. Actually, the Air Force said they don't need any more C-17s, and Boeing had planned to end production in 2010, I believe. But interestingly, I found a new White House fact sheet that maybe holds out for a brighter future for the C-17. But anyway, back to Air Force Blue Tube. I also like the Saving the Glacier Girl video that they link to. It's really the ABC News piece. Court, you might remember the P-38 Lightning that they brought out of the Greenland ice.
Yeah, they were fixing it up in Louisville for a while, or Lexington, Louisville, Frankfurt, something.
So there's a nice video. That's another example of the kind of thing you can find at that site. The P-38 is also actually one of my favorites. I remember as a kid, it was one of my prized airplane models that I'd built. If you're interested in the P-38, actually, there's a website you can go to. It's the P-38 National Association. It's P38ASSN.org. But anyway, the Air Force Blue Tube is my pick for this week. Go check it out. I think you'll find some enjoyable videos.
Great. And I do want to point out that in speaking with Shannon and Beth, we did get the web address to vote for their blog, the TravelMamas.com blog, on the Bloggies website. That's 2009.bloggies.com, and vote across the bottom of the screen for your favorite weblogs. Make sure that you vote for travelmamas.com.
Absolutely.
And if you would like to email us any suggestions or comments about the show, any questions, or just to plain make fun of us, we're open to that too. You can send us those emails at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Also, check out our website, airplanegeeks.com, and we have the newsletter on the right side that I have faithfully been updating once a week with all of our show notes, the stories that we covered in the podcast, as well as some of the stories that we didn't get a chance to cover. So make sure you do that. Our subscriber base seems to be growing slightly, and those who are subscribed can tell those who aren't just how serious we are about keeping your email address private. So no worries there. So go to our website and do that. Also, you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail message. That number is 812-757-4252. Should ring straight to voicemail, and you can leave us a message, or you can just send us an MP3 recording if you know how to do that, and we'll get you on the podcast. Other than that, Max, what am I forgetting? Let's see, support Flightline Internet Radio. Support all of our guests, travelingmamas.com. Of course, the best way is to tell your friends about us. We do appreciate that. Other than that, Max, I think that's it. That's all I can come up with.
Great.
So all I need then is a word of wisdom from you.
This is a word of wisdom from the late, great George Carlin, who... I think was sort of a remarkable and amazingly perceptive individual. And this quote has actually been associated with more than just George Carlin, interestingly enough, but I like to think that he's the originator of it because it sounds like him. It goes like this. If black boxes survive air crashes, why don't they make the whole plane out of that stuff?
Very good
think
point. That's wise. That's wise. Thank you again, everybody, for joining us on episode 32 of the Airplane Geeks. We'll talk to you all next week. We'll see you.
Bye, everybody. I got really, really drunk in Maui once, with a bunch of with a bunch of astronauts' wives. There was some kind of NASA conference or something, and it was, you know, most of the astronauts were men. Me and about eight NASA astronaut wives got really loaded.
That may be the best thing I've ever heard on the Airplane Geeks podcast, Max.